This is Tyler and Shay. Tyler and Shay.
I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago. Chicago. Always streaming on the ESPN Chicago app.
Check this out.
Good morning and welcome on in. It's Shay Norling and Tyler Rocky with you on ESPN 1000. Don't forget, you can watch the show on YouTube as well. YouTube.com, just search ESPN Chicago and take us on the go with that ESPN Chicago app. Good morning, Shay. We've got a couple Bears draft picks in the bank. And today it might be a little bit of an inactive day for Ryan Poles. Just one pick on day three. You know, the last 2 years he's had a combined 14. He's been active on day three. Day three is kind of his moving day, too. You'll see him shuffle up and down, but I have a feeling with one pick today, probably not much. But it is a clear new era of Bears football now after they drafted Caleb Williams, which we knew for a long time. And I think a lot of fans very happy with the selection of Roma Dunze as well. Some doubts as to whether or not he would be around at nine, but that is the pick for the Chicago Bears. And right now this offense looks like it can be one of the best in the NFL, given the surrounding cast for Caleb Williams.
I know fans usually react positively to drafts, especially when you have two picks in the top 10, but I don't remember seeing one that's like this universally beloved. I don't think there were any fans that woke up and were like, this blows. No, it's that does happen from time to time. How do you think Atlanta fans feel?
Right.
Their draft's horrific. Here, I think we've got everybody's just universally heaping praise onto Ryan Poles. Listen, man, Roma Dunze falling to nine, and you just stuck there and took the pick. I was clear I wanted an edge rusher, but there's nothing wrong with that. It's an excellent pick, and you're looking at a wide receiver of the future. You're pairing with a young quarterback. Billed as the best prospect since Andrew Luck. You're in a good place.
Yeah, I mean, there were very few ways. Like, you could have your preference of what you wanted the Bears to do at nine, and people obviously had different preferences.
Yeah, of course.
Receiver, edge, offensive lineman. There were very few ways that Ryan Poles could really fumble that ninth overall pick. Because the way that the board shook out, you could have been the one selecting the first defensive player off the board, and we didn't even see another defensive player go off the board until
16.
Yeah, it was a record in the NFL draft's history. And then we see water finds its level in the second round when 20 defensive players go in that second round because it was such a robust pool of players still remaining there. But the way that Poles attacked nine, and there was the talk of, oh, could he move up? And he thought about moving up to get Roma Dunze, but he stayed patient. And that's a credit to Ian Cunningham, it sounds like. But he stayed patient, got his guy that he wanted all along. And this Bears offense seems like it can be set up for quite some time because you've got a receiver and a quarterback that can grow together alongside a couple of talented receivers, one who's probably not for long with the Bears. And then you've got some offensive line pieces as well that hopefully are going to be the cornerstones, and you've got guys on this team for a decade plus.
Yeah, I was a little surprised how badly it seemed like Ryan Poles wanted Roma Dunze. Because not that I didn't think he wanted him, but once we got into the draft and then the things that we hear after the fact that he had to be held back from trading up to get Rome, I didn't realize. I don't know if anybody realized that it was that wedded of a relationship between the two of them. It was like, Rome is the guy, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get him. I kind of thought it was, we hope he's there at nine and we'll have a shot at him, but it feels more now like this is the miracle draft. If this happens, everything fell our way, and that's exactly the way they wanted it to play out.
Yep. 312-332-3776. If you want to join us, talk a little Bears. Should be a quiet day up at Halas Hall today. Just one pick in the fourth round, that Eagles pick that the Bears received last year for trading back.
It will not be quiet if and when the Bears select Kansas edge rusher Austin Booker. It will not be quiet because Danny Zetterman and Justin Pottinger are going to rattle the effing walls.
I will say, I've been waiting for this the Bears to draft a Jayhawk, man. I've been waiting for this.
What about Khalil Herbert, huh?
Yeah, but here's the thing, dude. I love Khalil Herbert.
You're taking the Hawk off his chest.
You
huh?
just got the sledgehammer out
think,
on Khalil
I don't think
Herbert.
He likes the Hawk on his chest, man. Apparently, he's not a big KD
Zed
guy.
Zed says he goes up whenever he sees Khalil Herbert. That he gives him a rock chalk.
Is this
and
true?
He always reciprocates with a rock chalk.
That's
yeah.
awesome, because I hear he's not the biggest, I'm a Jayhawk guy.
Ooh,
that's what I hear.
We got beef.
Yeah, well,
got a little Lawrence beef.
I can't believe you just sledgehammered Khalil Herbert.
No, I love Khalil Herbert. I do, but he's not.
That was not a declaration of love. When you get hit with, what about Khalil Herbert? And the answer is, meh.
That was at best a declaration of tolerance.
That's not you loving on a Jayhawk.
No, Austin Booker's he's awesome. I hope the Bears get him today.
Yeah, that seems
he's
to be
the guy.
The one need still to fill for this Bears team, and it's one that you were very keen on at the beginning of the draft, was this team needs an edge rusher. And I agree, this team does need an edge rusher. That seems to be that final piece of the puzzle defensively, because right now it's DeMarcus Walker, and while Montez Sweat makes life a lot easier on a guy like DeMarcus Walker, you'd like to upgrade that position to make life easier on Montez Sweat, too, because for as much of a multiplier as Sweat can be, you'd like for him to have life a little bit easier as well, so he can wreak even more havoc than what we saw last year when he was fantastic last year.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a defensive tackle. I was talking about this with Pat the Designer yesterday, that like the idea you're going to go defensive tackle in the mid round in three consecutive drafts, I just don't think that's going to happen. It feels like Jervon Dexter's the guy there. So edge rusher is probably going to be the point of attack, and the only one I care even a little bit about that's left on the board is Austin Booker. I wanted a Deese Isaac last night. I thought the board played in a way that was kind of miraculous. I am somebody that people think I'm crazy, that Penn State defensive line, of the two players, Chop Robinson and a Deese Isaac, I like the Deese Isaac better. And I thought it was a bit of a, frankly, miracle that he was available when the Bears were picking at 75. And I'm sitting there. I just wanted him. And we end up with some math nerd that's going to play tackle. Kieran Amagaji out of Yale.
A Hinsdale native. Big.
He was an economics major at Yale.
Big Bears fan growing up.
I'm just telling the truth.
Hometown kid.
That guy was Hinsdale. Going through the trenches with us when we were watching terrible Bears teams in the 20-teens and the 2020s. He was tweeting through it, and I think a lot of his old tweets got dug up,
good for him.
But he's a genuine fan, and he's going to come in and provide a little competition. Who knows where exactly he'll slot along the offensive line, but that is going to be a new piece of this Bears offensive line, and we'll see where exactly his fit in the as a third-round pick. I will say, for today's purposes, a big reason why the Bears only have one pick today is because of a pretty consensus thought around the league is that the draft pool this year is not nearly as strong as it has been in years past. Once you get to day three, a big reason why being NIL and guys not coming out to the draft, specifically underclassmen not coming out to the draft, a lot of COVID guys who, listen, man, if you can't crack it in your first 4 or 5 years, you're probably never actually going to get to that point of being an NFL caliber player. But those guys are some of the people that you will be looking at and will be selected in today's portion of the NFL draft. So all of that put together, I don't mind only having one pick today. Go out, fill a need. I think this is a team that's still equipped with cap space. Maybe look at the cut market at some point as your way to fill that void on as an edge rusher. If there's one there for you, great today. But if not, I'm okay filling it another way.
Could they still go center? The Georgia center, Cedric Van Pran, still on the board.
I think center is certainly a viable option. At this point, you're just taking a flyer because not only is it a fourth round pick, but it's a later fourth round pick as well, because it's not yours. It is the Eagles' fourth round pick. So it is a little bit further down in this fourth round, exactly at 22 in this fourth round. So pick 122 on the board. So you're pretty far back there at that point. For me, it's just kind of, all right, take a flyer, see what works, and maybe he turns into something. But when I look at this year's draft and picks in rounds 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th, you're not going to be seeing some of these sleepers. Like, I don't think you're going to find that Puka Nacua in this year's draft.
Who's still available at wide receiver?
Troy Franklin's the guy that you really like out of Oregon.
I'm actually surprised he's still on the board. Like, last night I was wondering if he quietly murdered someone. And Tyler, he was projected to go in the first round. He's still available on day 3. And that's a kid I watched at Oregon a lot, got a ton of separation. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, this guy, did this guy commit a murder? Like, why is he still on the board? So that's interesting to me. I mean, A.D. Mitchell fell a mile, way further than I thought he would fall. So wide receiver is going to be interesting. I don't know.
Tez Walker is a guy that I really like from UNC. I thought, and there's not as much tape on him from this past season because he was dealing with an academic issue that, quite frankly, was just bad on the NCAA.
Yeah.
Should have been allowed to play all along, and the NCAA, of course, decided to make life extremely difficult on him. Brendan Rice is the other name out there.
Yeah, I was about to say Brendan Rice.
That's Caleb Williams' teammate at USC, son of Jerry Rice, so
Bears would never double up at receiver, though. Either.
Yeah, I don't think that the Bears are going to be in the receiver market either.
Mid-round receivers for Ryan Poles, not a great return on investment so far.
Yeah, Velus Jones and Tyler Scott have not played out the way that Bears fans maybe would have liked. 312-332-3776. If you want to join us here, Joey G will kick us off. He's in Melrose Park. What's up, Joey?
Hey, gentlemen, how are you?
Good, man.
Hey. I'm watching you on YouTube for the first time. And you are a handsome devil.
All right, keep it in your pants, brother.
Damn right he is, Joey.
And why are you two together? I don't get it. Didn't you break Tyler's hand or finger or something, Joey?
No, he did that himself.
We will get to that later on. He's on the docket today, Joey.
He did that himself.
So my most important question is, Shay and Tyler, where do we go for the edge rusher?
Yeah, Joey, I think that this team is just going to try to clean up and maybe try to find someone off the scrap heap when you see cuts come out, whether it's post-June 1st, whether it's training camp cuts. I think that's where this team is going to go to try to find that edge rusher. And at this point, it's probably the best course of action.
Yeah.
It has to happen to take the double team up a sweat.
So
there's going to be somebody at least B-plus that can be a dangerous effect. This way Sweat can play his game, too.
I mean, Joey, I just wouldn't sweat that it's going to be like some vacant position when the season starts. Like, it might not be something that you're thrilled by. It might be another Yanni Ngakoue situation where you pick up a one-year guy that nobody signed deep into free agency as a camp addition, makes the team, and that's your answer for a year. It's just kind of a stopgap. Could also be Austin Booker today, the Kansas edge rusher. It's the only one left on the board that I give any rip about, and they pick him. Look, it's a fourth-round pick. I'm not telling you he's going to be some all-pro, but if he falls to the Bears and they get him, that's a quality player who was great in the Big 12 last year for Kansas, has some really nice tape. Put him on the opposite side of Montez Sweat. It's kind of that one-on-one opportunity thing. Well, Montez Sweat eats up a lot of the gravity, and see what happens.
Okay, well, that's all we can do is hope for the best, right, guys?
Yes, sir.
That's
thanks.
It, man.
But, you know, first time ever I heard last night, the Bears are the most dangerous team in the NFL.
Don't know if I'd go that far, yeah. Joey G.
But... No. Not, it was Mel Kiper on ESPN during the draft. That's incredible. I haven't heard that since 1985 when I was partying in bars.
I will say that.
Thanks for the call, Joey.
I don't want to call them the scariest team in the NFL or most dangerous team in the NFL because they're not. Like Kansas City,
Cincinnati, San Francisco.
There are just teams that are more, Detroit, frankly, that are more ready made and dangerous right now. There's a world where I can talk myself into the Bears, like maybe winning the NFC North. There is a world. Things have to play out really well.
Let's talk about that coming back, because I want to ask you, in the NFC North, who is the envy over the next 5 years? I'm giving you a five-year window. Who is the envy of it? Who comes away with the most division titles? Because I think long-term, this is a division that is set up to be an absolute bloodbath for the next 5 years because of the youth and talent in it. We'll discuss that when we come back. Who is the envy of the NFC North? 312-332-3776. We'll do all that and more when we come back.
This is Tyler and Shay.
Tyler and Shay. I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
3 of the NFL draft. Going to get going in a couple of hours from now. Bears only with one pick. But this NFC North is maybe the most fascinating division in all of football. It's really, you can pick either one of the Norths, in my opinion. And yep. You've got a lot of intrigue there. You've got a lot of star power in both of those divisions as well. Like, it used to be that these two divisions were just kind of black and blue football and grinded out. But now there's legitimate star power in each of these divisions. Whether it's quarterback, whether it's receiver, defenses, there are guys, there are major difference makers. And I look at the way that the NFC North in particular can play out over the next 5 years, given the quarterbacks in the division, given the surrounding talent, the coaching, all of that. This is the most intriguing and most talented division in all of the NFL right now, in my opinion. And the other thing, too, is that over the next 5 years, I think we could see a real shuffling of the deck, like perpetually a new champion every single year for the next 5 years. I think that this division's got so much intrigue and so much wild card potential. Like, it would not shock me if we see three playoff teams out of the NFC North. And ever since the NFL expanded to a 7-team playoff, there has been a division with three playoff teams every single year, starting in 2020. And it feels like the NFC North could be primed for that exactly this upcoming season.
Yeah, it feels like the NFC East might be a one-team division. The NFC South might be a one-team division. And then you grab three from the North and two from the West, and there you go. I agree. I think it probably is the best division in football. I look at the NFC or the AFC North, and I know what people said, like the Browns defense is so good, but the Deshaun Watson stuff, like, I just don't know what that's going to look like. Spending a lot of time in Saudi Arabia, always protecting his image. Very image conscious, Deshaun Watson. I don't know what that's going to look like. The Steelers, I think, might be a disaster. Like, they have absolute disaster potential with that quarterback room.
But they've had disaster potential for, like, the last 5 years.
And Tomlin still keeps found it together. Russell Wilson, I thought was good last year. I'll say good with like a lowercase g.
Better than people thought.
But over the last two seasons, there are no two quarterbacks in football responsible for more negative plays than Justin Fields and Russell Wilson. So I think that team could be a complete disaster. Like, the potential to be 7-10 or 8-9 is there, and so is the potential to just be an absolute nightmare. Since he gets the benefit of the doubt, you have Joe Burrow and obviously Baltimore. But the NFC North, like Minnesota, I was ready to write off, and I don't think that they're going to necessarily be good. I don't know that J.J. McCarthy is going to play a whole lot, but the Dallas Turner pick, I loved.
At 17.
I loved for them. So that could be a quicker rebuild than I was expecting. And if J.J. McCarthy hits and ends up being a good player, which is a massive question mark, that's a really good team. If Jordan Love has another year like he had last year and it's real and it wasn't one of the great mirages in NFL history, he's legit, that's a great team. The Lions, dude, I think they have an absolutely elite general manager in Brad Holmes. And he went out with a point of attack. They came away with two corners and Terry and Arnold, maybe the best corner in the draft. And then Ennis Rakestraw, this kid out of Missouri, who was the second best corner in the SEC. And I think that they're building a team that's going to be long-term good. Penei Sewell, locked up. Amon-Ra St. Brown, locked up. You assume Jared Goff will get locked up. And then you got the Bears. And the Bears are building an offense that might be one of the elite light shows in this league.
The highest potential quarterback in the division. You've got the receivers on the outside. The defense is a top 10, and that's a conservative number, top 10 defense, especially the way that it played at the end of last season. So all of that put together, there's a lot. And let's just say this too, the best player in the division is on the one that I think most people would agree is the worst team in the division right now,
Justin Jefferson in
the Minnesota Vikings. Yeah. And Justin Jefferson, now we don't know if he's long for the division, given the way that contract negotiations have sort of reached a very odd point. And we know that the Vikings have a strange way of doing business as well with non-quarterbacks. But I just look at everything in this division and who is the envy of the next 5 years in the NFC North?
I think it's Detroit. I think they're built well up front, both sides of the football. You've got Aiden Hutchinson, who's young. You're going to have to pay him, but you've secured Penei Sewell. Their offensive line's fantastic.
And if you look at what the line or what the Eagles have done, there's ways to do it.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And now you go out, secure your secondary with two high-level corners at the top of the draft. They are already coming off an NFC North championship and a NFC conference title game appearance. Mm-hmm. So I kind of just feel like it has to be the Lions, in part because I really believe in who they have in their front office. I think the Dan Campbell message, I don't know that he's a great in-game coach, but I think the messaging works, and somehow they keep getting Ben Johnson to stay.
Yeah.
So for me, it's them, but the Bears are a very close second. And it feels weird to like write off the Packers that way, but if Caleb Williams is 70% of what he's been billed as, he's the best quarterback in this division.
Yeah.
And one of the best quarterbacks in football.
By a significant margin, maybe, too.
If he's 80% of what he's been billed as, he might be the best quarterback in football. Like, it's just non-Patrick Mahomes division.
Yeah.
And if he's 100% of what he has been billed as, then he's Patrick Mahomes. So if you get what you are hoping for and expecting out of Caleb Williams, you have the most important player in the division locked up. Maybe for a decade, and that makes the next 10 years really interesting. Forget
right.
five.
The Bears have the biggest level of boom or bust potential in it all in the division right now. I mean, the ifs and buts are there, but ifs and buts can pan out too. And that's the thing that you're hoping for with Rome Odunze and with Caleb Williams and marrying those two players together over the course of the next 5 years is a significant upgrade when you look at what used to be the infrastructure there. I also, here's my envy team. You said you're not writing off the Packers, but you have them third. I think it is the Packers because from a stability standpoint, the coach to quarterback relationship there is the most stable of the three. Because you've got an offensive mind that is locked in as the head coach.
Yeah.
You can't say that about the other two guys as much in terms of like play calling. When you've got Matt LaFleur and Jordan Love having the season that he had last, I mean, he was second in the league in touchdown passes. You've got a receiving core that was all first and second year players, and they weren't first and second round picks, really.
Yep.
The way that they have cobbled that together and not just built out a tremendous receiving room, but built out depth within that receiving room as well. Who was the guy at the end of the year that was just catching passes for them out of nowhere? What was it? What was his last name? Boykin?
I can't remember his name, but it was Jaden Reed. It's Romeo.
Bo Melton. Was just making plays for this team out of nowhere down the stretch and in playoff games. And when you have that in your receiving room and you can just count on whoever, and it doesn't matter who you have lined up out wide, you're going to turn them into a player. That, to me, the marriage between coach and quarterback is the most stable in the division.
Yeah.
And I think that is the key to building out longevity. We see it across the league. I mean, Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes is a very stable relationship. That's the best quarterback-coach combination in all of football right now. And I think that's what the Packers have with Jordan Love and with Matt LaFleur. And that's why, for me, that is the most long-term stable and, for me, the envy of the NFC North right now.
Is there a chance Shane Waldron's the next head coach of the Bears?
Now, if you could sell me on that, the only thing to me is the path to Shane Waldron getting to the head coaching seat
is Eberflus getting canned.
Right, but Eberflus getting canned, to me, feels like something went really wrong.
Correct. That's my issue
with this team.
Like, trying to project that doesn't really work for me.
I don't see that going I don't see that being a plausible way forward for this Bears team. Either it's going to be this group together, Eberflus, Waldron, and Caleb Williams, or it's getting blown out. And you could say, oh, like, there's no world that I can see where the offense is so good, but the team is so bad. Where Shane Waldron proves himself to be an NFL head coach caliber coordinator, but the defense is so bad that the record is not good enough to keep Matt Eberflus around.
Yeah, I think your point is well put, in the fact that, like, the Lions, the concern is going to be Ben Johnson, you assume, eventually will leave.
That feels like a ticking time bomb right now.
And if you're the Bears and things go really well, you're not going to move Eberflus. So eventually Shane Waldron will leave. Like, he could have been a head coach last cycle from what we were hearing, and he ended up taking the offensive coordinator job here. Unless he's a guy who's like, I just want to be a coordinator and you're going to pay me a lot of money to do it, Vic Fangio style, then he will eventually leave, and I think that's a reasonable fear. The other thing that makes me feel like it's the Lions, though, is all of these teams with the receivers, like the Bears and DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, even though he's a short-term guy most likely, and then you add in Rome Odunze, the Vikings, obviously, with Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison, and the Packers kind of late-round picking their way into finding stars, a guy like Jaden Reed and Christian Watson, of course. The Lions kind of had point. They were serving when they paid Amon-Ra St. Brown. And I think the Vikings and the Bears, if you could give them truth serum, would tell you they are livid that Amon-Ra St. Brown got $30 million.
Yeah.
Because that price tag on Justin Jefferson might be 40. And the Vikings aren't paying that.
Right.
I don't know who is. The price tag on DJ Moore might be 32.5, 33.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have a feeling if you could ask Ryan Poles truthfully, were you happy when you saw the Amon-Ra money come through? The answer would be no.
I would guess, I don't think that the Amon-Ra contract is going to be some sort of big holdup between the Bears and DJ Moore. I'd imagine the Bears number is something that they're comfortable with within a threshold of $1 or $2 million north or south of the 30 that was given to Amon-Ra.
It's what happened with Jalen Johnson.
I think it just kind of made negotiations a little bit easier for the Bears.
You have a number that you can field around.
Yeah.
The Vikings certainly should be more upset because they're going to have to bite the bullet on Justin Jefferson. He's just not going to be. Like, what are the odds when we start the season in 2025 that Justin Jefferson's still a Viking? I'm at like 1%. I don't think he'll be there.
I think there's still, I don't think you go out and draft J.J. McCarthy only to rid yourself of Justin Jefferson. And it's not like there's not more talent in that pass-catching room as well. I mean, Jordan Addison had a very, very strong rookie season. T.J. Hockenson is really good as well. Like, there is still talent there for J.J. But the reason why I think you bring in J.J. McCarthy is so that he can be with a Justin Jefferson. Listen, J.J. McCarthy, no one's going to tell you that he was the best quarterback in this class, but J.J. McCarthy, can he work with Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison and T.J. Hockenson and a solid offensive line? Like, can he work with that? Probably.
A lot of pieces in place. Christian Darrisaw on the tackle.
Make things easier on your rookie quarterback. And I think part of that, too, is the defense and the way that they invested on the other side of the ball as well with Dallas Turner. People don't think that building up a strong defense is an investment in your rookie quarterback. The truth of the matter is that, yes, it is an investment in your rookie quarterback, because if you're not asking that rookie quarterback to go out and get you 28 points a game, you're making life a little bit easier on them. When they only need 21, 24 instead of 28, 35, that is an investment in your rookie quarterback.
Yeah. Can you do me a favor on the topic of J.J. McCarthy and take this phone call?
It sure
appears
can.
We have a glutton for punishment on the line.
Eddie on the north side. Good morning, Eddie.
Good morning, boys. Wouldn't you agree that J.J. McCarthy is the guy that's ready to go in as a starter?
No.
I mean, he just took him all the way to a championship and played in high-power games and got wins.
No, I wouldn't. No.
Why not?
Because he didn't take them to a championship. Their defense, their offensive line, and their running game did.
It's just like Brock Purdy. Everybody says that about him.
Yeah, no, it's not. Because Eddie, stop. Brock Purdy set a yardage record in college. Brock Purdy threw the football. It is nothing like Brock Purdy. It's not even anything like Mac Jones. Those guys threw the football in college. J.J. McCarthy had 18 pass attempts a game.
You're giving them a lot more
weapons.
Did he
not have weapons in Michigan? I'm sorry. Was Roman Wilson some bum?
I don't know. Did he get drafted?
Yeah. Yesterday.
Yesterday? I didn't watch yesterday's, but I just watched the first
day. Was J.J. McCarthy, was he the most polished quarterback? What are you talking about, man? He threw 18 passes a game. He went over 2,500 yards. Let's check. Oh, never!
Shay, they said that about another guy, Tom Brady, when he was at Michigan.
He threw the effing ball! What are you talking about? He won an Orange Bowl. He beat Bama. He threw the football. What are we doing here?
Okay, well, maybe I'll be proven wrong, but, you know, I've been proven right about it, just the whole Justin Fields thing all the way to
Man,
the end.
Broken clock.
Yeah.
It's right twice a day, Eddie.
All right, guys, have a good day.
You as well. Eddie, the quarterback whisperer on the north side, firing up Shay here early in the morning. We'll take more of your Bears calls as well. 312-332-3776. And also, Shay can take a big, fat victory lap as well.
I'm so excited.
A little bit later on. All that coming up. Tyler and Shay on ESPN 1000.
This is Tyler and Shay.
Tyler and Shay. I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Tyler Aki and Shay Norling with you on ESPN 1000, also on the ESPN Chicago app. Download that ESPN Chicago app. Talking some Bears with you as the NFL draft, 2 days in, one more to go, rounds 4 through 7 on today. And we've been talking about the envy of the NFC North. This is going to be a super competitive division over the next 5 years when you look at the youth of the quarterbacks, the infrastructure coaching wise, the young talent littered throughout the division. I mean, the Packers last year were one of the surprise teams in football that won a playoff game on the road, not just winning a playoff game. They slaughtered the Cowboys.
Should have beaten the Niners.
And yes, we're on the door. I mean, both of these teams in the division should have beaten the Niners last year. Had very real chances of doing so, and ultimately come up a little bit short because of some second-half downfalls. But this is going to be one of those divisions that over the next 5 years, I mean, the Packers were the youngest team in football last year on snap-adjusted age. That is, to me, when you've got a pass-catching room of guys that are not one or everyone is second year in the league or younger, that, to me, is the sign of an extremely promising future. And not just that, but you're not doing with first and second round picks. And these guys, it feels like you can call someone up and they'll just step right in. And it's like, it feels like it's the system and not the players as much in Green Bay. And when you have an offensive minded head coach like Matt LaFleur, that feels like it's good for the future.
Yeah, and it's Shanahan's system. And right. Like at this point, is anybody going to deny that that's a real thing? Like you look at Miami, Shanny system, the Rams, Shanny system, Packers, Shanny system, Niners, of course. Mm-hmm. All those teams, good right now. So like, and then Dolphins doing it kind of with duct tape and glue. Now, obviously, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle are great players, but they have by far the worst quarterback of the bunch. So that system just feels real, and as long as LaFleur is there and running it, they're going to be a hard out.
Coaching stability for the Packers is the best situation right now. I think another thing, too, they brought in Jeff Hafley as well to be their defensive coordinator because that defense was atrocious at the beginning of the year. It seemed like they figured some things out towards the end of the season, but bringing in a guy who was a college head coach just a year ago, and we've seen this quite a bit now where college head coaches are either taking coordinator jobs in the NFL or taking coordinator jobs in college just because you don't want to deal with some of these headaches anymore. Yeah. I think we're only going to see more and more of that. And Jeff Hafley was a pretty good coach at BC given the resources that you get at BC.
Yeah, and just a guy who wasn't going to get more resources at BC, right. And so you call it what it is. It is funny. Like, I still can't believe Chip Kelly.
That's
went
the
from
one
head
that
coach
was like
to OC at Ohio State. Just so weird.
And something that really, like, for this year's purposes and beyond, is an intra conference move. Going from UCLA to Ohio State, you're staying within the conference with all the realignment.
He had to have been told he was a dead man walking going into this next year at UCLA. Like, he had to have been told. I just can't figure out why he made that move. I still can't figure it out.
So you pinned your envy of the NFC North as the Detroit Lions. I am sticking with the Green Bay Packers. They just have the history, and I think they have the long-term runway to do it again and still be the beast of this division. But the Bears are the one team that I think can foil this whole operation.
I was just going to say, I think what's really interesting is if we do this topic here, and obviously we're going to have external answers.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I feel like it's Detroit. They've earned the benefit of the doubt. The front office is incredible. The draft picks that they make continue to impress. Whether the the process a year ago in the 2023 draft, Brad Holmes said, I'm going to break every rule. I'm going to take a running back and a linebacker in the first round.
Off-ball linebacker.
I'm going to go totally out of modern process, and every pick he made hit. And you just, that guy knows what he's doing. Then they go into this draft and take two corners, a position in need, and they just decide to go strength on strength. Like, I think they're doing a really good job. But my point is, if you do this topic in Detroit, if you do this topic in Milwaukee or Green Bay, if you do this topic in Minneapolis, all three answers are Chicago.
That is interesting. I think there is a fear of the Bears, and I don't think we've had a fear of the Bears in quite some time. In 2018, there was a little bit of fear because that defense was so good, but this is now a balanced fear because the offense has a high ceiling. A lot of it contingent on the quarterback, but even if Caleb is average to slightly below average this year, this offense is still going to be solid because there are just so many options on it. Defensively, there is a fear because you've got Montez Sweat. Your secondary is really strong, especially now that you do have a semblance of a pass rush to it. Your linebackers have been multifaceted as well. They can work in the pass rush game. They can work in coverage. They're good run stuffers as well. Like, all of this put together, there is a balanced fear surrounding the Chicago Bears, and that is an interesting point. Like, if you were to poll the rest of the division, I think you would be getting more Bears answers.
I think the consensus from all three fan bases would be the Bears are the scariest team over the next 5 years.
312-332-3776. We want to know your thoughts as well. Rob's in Texas. What's up, Rob?
Shay, Eddie from the north side is going to make me come off the top rope two days in a row. Not only did he not watch the second day of the draft, I don't think he watched his football, period.
Why do you think he likes J.J. McCarthy so much, Rob?
He's a local kid. Hell, my mom's name.
I think that's the generous reason.
My mom's maiden name's McCarthy. We might even be related for all I know. But
I'm going to leave that alone.
The thing about McCarthy is you just don't know. He didn't have to play a style of football where he had to throw the ball over the field. And Jim Harbaugh is not going to adjust his coaching style or what he thinks puts him in the best position to win just so he could have a quarterback throw the ball over the field. So, I mean, J.J. McCarthy may turn out to be really something special. Who knows? He's only lost, three games, they said, since his starting quarterback, since his freshman year of high school. So, I mean, the kid's got some talent, and time will tell, and I think that's the point. I mean, Eddie's already going to anoint him as above Caleb Williams, I guess. So, time will tell.
Rob, I think you fell into the ocean, but no, that's been my whole point with this whole time. J.J. McCarthy, nobody knows what he is. Anybody who's saying that they know what he is either wrong and mythologizing it or lying to you. Like, just nobody knows.
Think about the recent trends of quarterbacks who we don't know a lot about and we didn't see a ton. There's guys like Mitch Trubisky. There's guys like Trey Lance. There's also guys like Justin Herbert. Like, it can work out. And I'm not saying he's Justin Herbert. I'm not saying he's the next Mitch Trubisky. But it can work out. It's not who I would be trying to move up for in a draft like that.
It just feels so Zach Wilson to me. And
Wilson's another one, yeah.
I think J.J.'s getting a better landing spot than Zach Wilson did with the Jets.
Some people think that of all the possible landing spots for a first-round quarterback, the Vikings had the best infrastructure.
Yeah, and
It'd be tough to argue with.
I think he's getting a pretty good landing spot. I don't think they're going to rush him to be the starter. I don't think they're going to rush him to play. I think he can sit for a year. He could be really good. But my point has always been, he didn't throw the ball much in college. If your argument in favor of him is going to be, well, watch the games, why? Watch the games for what? He threw the ball. Like, I can watch the Penn State game where they decided we can't protect against Chop Robinson and Deese Isaac, so we're going to run the ball 31 straight times because we don't trust this quarterback to make decisions against pressure like that. I could watch the Maryland game where he stunk. I could watch the Ohio State game where he threw the ball 20 times and a couple of them were really nice throws, but he only had 148 yards. Or I could go back and I could watch the games when the offensive staff had the defensive play calls. What do you want me to do? I don't know what he is. He could be great. He could be terrible. But the idea that Eddie's going to call up and say he's the most polished.
He's the least polished.
He's the least by far to me.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with you on that. All right, when we come back, we'll take more of your calls and Shay can victory lap on me. We'll do that.
This is Tyler and Shay.
Tyler and Shay. I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Thanks to Potsy, Justin Pottinger, for producing today's show. Real quick, before we get into a little bit of our softball talk, Downtown Dean. What's up, Dean?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How you doing?
Good, man.
Yeah, so I would like to start off by saying thank God Chris Black is not hosting and driving this show, or I'd be on hold until Monday morning.
Many would argue that's a better outcome.
Wife is hot. One time you say a guy's wife is hot and you get banned for life. But I digress.
Well, actually, you just said it two times, and I am in party with Chris Black. You should stop saying it, please, for all of us.
So this is exactly why I called. See, the Bears, I've been on record saying on multiple shows I prefer Odunze. Tom Waddle likes him also. The combination of me wanting to be right and also everything falling into place, the Falcons making that pick for Penix, everything coming together is making me start to want to become a Bears fan again. But I want to talk very briefly because I heard Shay Norling talking about this Monday, saying it was the dumbest move he's ever seen. I understand in hindsight it looks stupid, fellas. I would not be so angry if I was a Falcons fan about this. I'd be suicidal if I was a Denver Broncos fan. The best time to draft that QB is when you don't need one. That saying, people are saying it all the time, it might not necessarily apply to everyone. When Tom Brady went to Tampa and when Peyton went to Denver in, what was it, 2015, if those people use their first-round draft picks on a quarterback, that would be like sacrilege. Kirk Cousins has not earned that right. He has not earned that right. He is not that guy. His camp to come out publicly and bemoan that pick, that was unprofessional. It was childish. It's just another reason in the long list of reasons to absolutely hate Kirk Cousins. Take that, fellas.
All right. Thank you, Dean. I will say a lot of people are talking about how, the Falcons did a bonehead thing and that helped out the Bears. I don't really think it did.
I don't think it matters.
They took a quarterback, and if they didn't take a quarterback, they weren't taking Rome Odunze.
I think they were taking Dallas Turner.
Yeah, Dallas Turner, I was thinking.
Forever it was going to be a defensive player, whether it was Dallas Turner or if they liked Byron Murphy. That pick was either going to be defense or a quarterback, and it didn't really shuffle the deck for the Bears at all. But
Dean can feel the way he wants about it. Anytime you pay a quarterback a massive amount of money to be there for 4 years, and in the same season that you do that, you draft a quarterback with the number 8 pick in the draft, I think you're stupid. You should have taken a starter because you have a win-now roster. That's the reason you went and got Kirk Cousins. You're trying to make the playoffs. I think you're dumb. It made no sense. It was stupid.
Yeah. Or even if you are going to take Penix, you should be trading back to try to acquire some more assets along the way.
And now the quarterback that you paid in the offseason's pissed at you. Your process was stupid.
Yeah. All right. Go ahead. Get your running shoes on.
12-inch softball is definitively better than 16-inch softball. Read the splint on your finger. That would have never happened in 12-inch. You would have been wearing a glove. You would have fielded the ball clean. We would have had a great time at the bar afterwards. Instead, I got in the backseat of your car while your girlfriend is ripping into you for just wanting to drink instead of getting your finger looked at. You go get your finger looked at, you've got floating bone. None of this would have ever happened if we would have just played 12-inch softball. I just want that to be known. Definitively better.
You know what would have happened if it was 12-inch? I'm catching one of the jaw instead.
Why? Because you have piss poor reaction
probably,
time?
Probably.
That's why?
Listen.
Just catch it.
The ball,
you got a glove.
Maybe it spits up on you, too, on a grounder. It hits a pebble and boom, you catch one in the eye.
Yeah, because the 16-inch is so reliable to not hit a pebble.
It's not coming at you that fast.
I can't believe you broke your finger.
This is one of the funniest things
that's ever happened.
You think it's what? Karmic justice for me?
Yeah, because you're making fun of me, and then you go drop a pop-up and break your finger the week after. I think it worked perfectly. I will never forget the image of the bartender bringing us a bag of ice.
The picture is great.
He put his body on the line. I jammed my pinky. It healed by the next morning.
Yeah.
You? 6 weeks.
Yeah, 6 weeks.
How you like them apples?
I'm not excited for this. Although I did find out it is not going to be an impediment on my golf season as severely as I thought it would be. Because that's the only thing I really care about.
That was the first thing you said.
If this happened in the winter, I would not be mad. I would not be even slightly mad. But because we're starting to creep into the golf season now, now you're messing with my personal time.
How inconvenient is it?
It's like, I don't know, like you're carrying like a grocery bag or something like that. It's not the best thing to do. Showering's a pain in the ass.
I mean, like, are there things that are typically easy that are more difficult because you've got that ridiculous splint on all the time?
Yeah, like, it's just, like, basic stuff. Like
Typing would make me furious.
Yeah, typing. Well, typing is only a problem right now because it's also sprained at the bottom. And the sprain is what's hurting the typing. But I've got a different splint that I use during the day if I need to type. And once the sprain is gone, then I'll be fine typing.
He's got his typing splint.
Well, it's more of like my day. Like, this one is the night splint. This is the one I sleep with.
Night splint, day splint, typing splint.
Well, no. The day splint and the typing splint are the same splint. So
you got your alone time splint, if you know what I'm saying.
Jeez. I'm a righty. All right, that's gonna do it for us right now. By the way, hidden superstar, Justin Pottinger.
What an athlete!
Thank you.
My God,
2 for 2, made a good catch.
Well done. They want you back. You know what?
While
I'm on my IL stint, they may need to call you up full time.
Talk some trash.
Yeah, let me know.
Loved having you. All right, that's going to do it for us here. We will be back with you next week, 8 a.m. The CDGA Golf Show coming up next.
This is Tyler and Shay.
Tyler and Shay. I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.